Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Fireside Room, Fred McCandless is speaking on disarming the Enneagram. So let's listen in on Fred McCandless.
All this week we've been talking about the Enneagram system, which is basically a road mapping system for developing spirituality and personality and help us wake up to who we are as opposed to who we keep presenting ourselves to be. And we have someone new in the room today. I recognize almost everyone else. We have one newcomer. Anyone else? Okay, we'll talk about you.
Oh, thank you. No. I think I'm in the wrong room.
You're in the right room at the right time. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. Okay.
That was deep.
Oh, and that's too high. In a nutshell, this is what we've been talking about. These nine different perspectives arranged around the circle are hooked together by these different lines. Now, someone pointed out to me yesterday, or day before yesterday, what do these lines represent? I mean, there's these, the nine and the three and the six, these are connected by kind of on their own little triangle, and the other types have this funny interaction of lines. This has been a spot of great controversy within the people who teach the Enneagram, because although the symbol itself is very old, this circle with the triangle and the other, what they call the hexad, the other six points, the lines were never really defined. There was no text that came along with the symbol saying this is what it means. For all we know, it may have been a doodle. It may have been something that somebody used for engineering. You know, this is how you design a wheel so it won't collapse. The first bicycle tire. I don't know. But what has happened is that when people have been utilizing the system, they realize that when people are in a healthy space, when their self-esteem is really high, and their ego needs are met or relatively low, they tend to take on characteristics of a type that is connected to their home style by one of the lines. These lines indicate either growth, if we're feeling good about ourselves, or decay when we're feeling really anxious and our needs aren't being met. In other words, if our needs aren't met, we find a way to have those needs met, which can be very negative. And if you've just joined us, some of this information is on the handouts. I'm talking about the different centers and the interaction of the centers, and I'll throw that up here really fast. The idea behind the centers is that they... Sorry for all you ones, it's crooked, that's too bad. All right, Jan.
Jan's starting to fidget.
I can tell. She's like, I'm getting my stuff, I'm getting out of here. It's as good as it's going to be. Okay. The idea is that the three centers interact. You have a gut center, a heart center, and a head center. And the interaction of these centers really give us our power, or can actually help us to sabotage what we're doing. When the dominant center, where you find yourself in one of these areas, you'll be in a dominant. Like these three here represent the heart center. Use it the most. It's the dominant center that's relating, communicating with others, needing to get their needs met more emotionally than intellectually or physically. So it's the interaction of the centers that give us our power. What happens, though, is that the center becomes over-dominant and says, okay, I need more control, so what I'm going to do is be more emotional. For example, the author will start to over-dramatize. It's like they step almost into a caricature instead of being a real person. They become over-real. And it becomes very difficult for people who are more ordinary, because the four defines themselves as being more unique. People who do this very well, suddenly it's more difficult to relate to other people because they've turned up the emotional intensity, and the other people who are outside of that type don't relate to it very well. They have a hard time. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about here, is that we actually start doing our type too well. We find that comfort zone and say, I'm going to keep doing this. We talked about the optimist seven being someone who avoids painful situations. And what can happen is the seven goes from being the clown and entertaining and relating and smiling and telling stories to being the buffoon, to actually trying to get out of a nervous situation by laughing too loudly, by calling too much attention to themselves, and pretty soon people start feeling sorry for the optimist because suddenly this person is out of they're out of bounds. They're without, they're almost outside the circle. They become so extreme. The title of this talk is Disarming the Enneagram. What I really want to talk about is some of the dangers that are inherent within any kind of a typology system. This system being one. But this system has almost more potential for harm than any of the others. Because, number one, it's very old, it's been used a very long time, and it's just now, in the last 15 to 20 years, been taught popularly to groups, larger groups, more than one-on-one. Initially, the Enneagram was taught as an oral tradition. That meaning that a teacher who knew about the system had been taught by someone else who knew the system, and that teacher would talk to you just about your own specific style, working with you slowly to draw out your compulsive behavior and basically push your buttons until you were aware of the behavior so that you would become more aware or more enlightened. As a consequence, you only knew about your own style. You didn't know about the other eight. One of the cautions that I'm giving you today on the system is that as you use it for yourself. Find your home style and work with that. Work with your own compulsive behavior. See it. Ask people you know how you're acting. Watch the little things that you do every day. What happens is if you come to somebody and say, you know, I really think you're a six, then what you've done is you've taken this person's personhood, their whole individual essence, God being on this planet, and you have put them into a defined box. But because you're looking at just a few characteristics and think, well, this must be you, if they're not, then you run into the difficulty of you've just laid another overlay on top of them. And they may have to work through what it's like being a six before they get to their home type, which may be acting like a three. That's why I'm really insistent on the fact that we do personality and we do what other people expect us to do. If I've defined myself as being the champion eight and I'm defining myself as being very powerful, then as long as I'm seen as powerful, I'm almost required to act that out. I will start getting involved with people who I may think are weaker only because I need to somehow act out that power. It may not be what I want to do. That's why using the system, well, I hate to say it, but as a parlor game, where we say, oh, geez, you must be a four, and you're a six, and you're an eight, and eights always act like that. The truth is, eights don't always act like anything, because there's no such thing as an eight. Okay. These are styles, these are ways of acting, and they're only useful in helping us figure out where we are on the journey, which is why I describe this system, I'll remove the centers, and this diagram as a map. Once you find out where you are, and sometimes people have a hard time accepting that one of these styles is predominant within them, because we see ourselves in every single pet, in every single area. We are good negotiators. None of us likes to be at war all the time, so we have this ability to equalize and peace and make things peaceful. It's when that becomes over-dominant and we try to make conflict go away by ignoring it, or just basically not just pretending it's not there, which is an ignorance, but also by telling other people there's no such thing as conflict. Okay, this sort of happened in World War II. Well, there's not a problem in Germany. The German people themselves weren't aware of what was going on in the concentration camps. This numbing quality can be used as a very bad thing. Okay, but we all have the ability. Settling disputes between our children. Finding a way to settle disputes with our spouses and significant others in our lives. Coming to terms with our parents and somehow trying to negotiate and kind of mediate our past histories, trying to let go of things that don't matter anymore. We can't change what has happened, but some of us carry around this garbage, this baggage. That problem comes from saying, it's not important, it doesn't matter. Which is what the negotiators do to an extreme. Nothing matters. It doesn't matter that you've hurt me in the past. It doesn't matter that you've hurt me. It doesn't matter that you've hurt me. But it does. Sometimes we focus down so much on what we want to see, we miss the bigger picture. We miss the space between the stars when we look at the constellation. We think, oh, there it is. Well, really, it's a huge pattern, and there's a lot of space. Actually, a quote here I want to read to you. It's from It's called a book. This book's called Views from the Real World, Early Talks of Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff brought this system out of the Near East from the Hindu Kush, where he basically discovered it, learned it, and thought it was valuable enough to bring to Western culture, and this would have been in about the 1920s. And we're in a cycle now of spiritual awakening. And I want to talk to you just for a minute. I'm going to read this through. It's not too long, but it's important. Besides self-knowledge, there is another aspect of the search. Search for self, self-development. Let us see how things stand there. It is clear that a man left to his own devices cannot wring out of his little finger the knowledge of how to develop, and still less exactly what to develop in himself or herself. Gradually, by meeting people who are searching, by talking to them, and by reading relevant books, a person becomes drawn into the sphere of questions concerning self-development. But what may such a person meet here? First of all, an abyss of the most unpardonable charlatanism, based entirely on the greed for making money, by hoaxing gullible people who are seeking a way out of their spiritual impotence. But before a person learns to divide the wheat from the tares, a long time must elapse, and perhaps the urge itself to find the truth will flicker and go out in that person, or will become morbidly perverted, and his blunted fear may lead the person into such a labyrinth that the path out of it, figuratively speaking, will lead straight to the devil. If a person succeeds in getting out of this first swamp, the person may fall into a new quagmire of pseudo-knowledge. In that case, truth will be served up in such an indigestible and vague form that it produces the impression of a pathological delirium. This person will be shown ways and means of developing hidden powers and capacities which this person has promised. If persistent, this person will, without much trouble, give power and domain over everything, including animate creatures, inert matter, and the elements. All these systems, based on a variety of theories, are extraordinarily alluring. No doubt precisely because of their vagueness. They have a particular attraction for the half-educated, those who are half-instructed in positivist knowledge. In view of the fact that most questions studied from the point of view of esoteric and occult theories often go beyond the limits of data accessible to modern science, these theories often look down on it. Although on the one hand they give the positivist science its due, on the other they belittle its importance and leave the impression that science is not only a failure, but even worse. All these systems are based on a variety of theories and are extraordinarily alluring. When I discovered the Enneagram system about 5 years ago, I was taken with it immediately. I thought this is one of the most interesting and dynamic, almost seductive systems I've ever come across. There was something about it I wanted to learn more. It told me things about myself that I didn't even know. And it was difficult for me at first to use the system on myself. It was very easy to take people that I knew and say, oh, you must be this because these are your characteristics, or this is your characteristics. It was almost as bad as the old pickup line used in the average bar, which is, what's your sign? Astrology is a huge system. It's got thousands of years, even more probably history than the Enneagram. And it is an outside system. It says you are a product of your destiny, the planets were doing this, this is what happened to you when you were born, etc. But because it's outside, we can take it or leave it. The Enneagram is something that almost immediately is swallowed whole, and then we wait for the effect. Sometimes it's a good effect. Sometimes we get a hold of it and we think, this tastes really good. I think I'll move forward with this. Because I do seven as my dominant style, I'm always interested in new ideas. And how might this relate to this, and how might this relate to this? Like I talked about yesterday with this pinball machine. launching the idea and looking at all the fancy things it can do and all the colors and flashing lights, racking up the score, which, at least to me, is meaningless. The fun is playing the game. And so it's very simple for me to say, oh, well, this person is here, and this person is here, and this person is here, and not have any idea what I'm doing. The allure of any system, be it the Myers-Briggs typology system, which business has picked up on and is starting to use it to put people into work teams. There is this temptation with any system, and with this system especially, to use it to manipulate the world because of our fear. And that fear is that our needs won't be met, that if somehow I can figure out your number, then I know how to talk to you, I know what to expect from you, and I know what not to expect from you. So rather than trust your innate ability as a divine being on this planet, I put you into a special category, and I will draw on you when I need you. Now, this presentation, is relatively new material. The other teachers who are still teaching the Enneagram, and there are many books out now. When I was at Stanford University for this first annual Enneagram conference, they were expecting 400 to 500 people and got 1,500 people. All of the authors were there. Helen Palmer, if you've seen any of her books, she has one in the bookstore. Richard Rohr, who's teaching it he's a Franciscan friar, and he's teaching it. Patrick O'Leary and Don Riso, both ex-Jesuits. And Maria Biesing, who's a Dominican nun. This has been sort of taken on board more by the Catholic Church, I think, than any of the others. But Richard Rohr is teaching it from a very spiritual perspective. Don Riso teaches it from a psychopathological perspective. Helen Palmer teaches it from the point of view of putting a panel of people in front of the room, and then you're supposed to guess the type, and you're supposed to guess your own type. There's more discernment involved in guessing your type. And I'm running against the grain by telling you to be careful. Be extraordinarily careful with this, like you might handle nitroglycerin. For me, the core of the system involves the centers and the energy. And if you learn how to use your center energy correctly, if you learn to listen to the gut, if you learn to incorporate the head and the heart centers and listen to what the right way of using the material is, you're beginning on the path. This system is not an end result. For some people, this isn't even the right beginning. You may taste this and spit it back out, and that's okay. I'm not asking you to swallow it whole. Watering the plants. Okay. See, I can see angels in heaven, and all you can do is see. That's okay. That's not a problem. Thank you. It was actually well timed. I'm going to open this up for discussion in just a minute, but I want to read a quote from W.B. Yeats from a poem called Unicorn from the Stars. And in a very brief passage, it sort of told me what this is all about. The battle we have to fight is fought out in our own mind. There is a fiery moment, perhaps once in a lifetime. And in that moment, we see only the thing that matters. It is in that moment the great battles are lost or won. For in that moment, we are part of the host of heaven. Right now, you're in such a moment, from my perspective. As you learn about this system, and for some of you this is the very first day, and you're going, oh my God, let me out of this room. There is a responsibility that comes along with this system. And I can't pull back what I've told you. I can't say, please give me back what I've taught to you. I'm not a therapist, and I'm not a counselor. I am simply a teacher. And I need to teach this. I think that what this offers is important. But I beg you not to use it irresponsibly. To categorize people before you know who they are. if you drew a Venn diagram like I've used for the center, I show this as three intersecting circles. This is just a simple model to use so I can explain how the centers interact. I think there may even be more center energy than this is representing. There may be another spiritual center which I can only approximate. This is a two-dimensional figure. And we are three-dimensional and probably multi-dimensional beings. So don't believe this. This is not the truth. This is not the truth. This is a way of reading systems. This is a way you can apply the Enneagram to many different kinds of things. It's the way that I always had it explained to me. It's like a silent operand. Ignore the words and just see the symbol. It's like a multiplication sign, or an addition sign, or an equals sign. By itself, it has no meaning. It's how it's applied. So when you take Fred McCandless and you put him through the Enneagram, what comes out the other side? I don't even know all of it yet. I know that for some reason, when I go through here, this is the light that comes on for me. This is where I found my compulsive behavior. This is where I found my greatest challenge. So I'm working with my issues. That doesn't mean I can't do this, or this, or this. It just means that I do this better. To become more whole and more integrated, maybe I need to do this more often. I can practice this kind of behavior, but the motivation that's behind the behavior is always coming from here. What motivates me is trying to run away from pain, trying to get out of it. How do I escape this situation? And when I get into a situation where, say, someone has died, then I have this, like, emptiness, and I'm not sure why. Except that emotion, that wanting to experience the pain and the sorrow is somehow vague to me. So I try to be more aware and more caring and try to include myself in a painful situation. Not out of masochism, but out of a desire to learn. And I can learn a lot by being around people who experience those emotions very intensely, because that intensity awakens a piece of me that I need to know more about. And it takes years. This could take forever. This could take a lifetime. So as you use it for yourselves, it's very good. But again, if you point it at somebody else and shoot, it will inflict more damage, I think, than you can realize at the point of shooting. Tom?
Last year when you were presenting, you were making a more standard presentation, and it was a lot of fun. And apparently you've been reflecting on this, and you have been sensitized to how it can be misused. And that's good. But for those who haven't gone any further, and you refer to the map, I'd like to have you allude, at least briefly, to the arrows, the negative and the positive arrows, because when you speak of the complexity, and you haven't alluded to the Marika thing. I'd like to have you cover a little more than what you
said. Okay. The disclaimer's been given. The warning's been announced. I'm going to show you the heart of the system. Okay. This is when I started to recognize my biggest problems. This is when I started understanding how the lines interact. Ready? What this means is that the direction that the arrow is pointing is what I call the path of least resistance. That's the path that our compulsions take. It's the path of habit. It's the path that we have chosen when things don't go our way. be it whatever you're running away from. Now, when I talked about the threat and defense mechanisms the other day, you know, each type has their threat to self-identity, and then there's this reaction that happens. If that reaction continues for a length of time, the tendency is to move with the arrow. Now, from here it would be down the arrow. Okay? Down, but this is also down. It's a spiral backwards. Okay, it's the flame in the center shrinking. The essence is being occluded by what the ego is trying to do. The courageous thing to do, and the hardest thing to do, is to move against that, which is to first be aware of the compulsive behavior. It's the very first thing we need to do. And I'll go around and talk about each of these. With me so far? Mm-hmm. Questions? Yeah.
Was there, I missed the first day, but is there some reason why each one is next to each other? I mean, why is three next to four or four? Or was it, they could have been randomly mixed anyway?
Not really, and that's what the arrows explain. The idea is that you have the center activity, which defines basically these three types are heart-centered.
Oh, okay, that's right, your heart. Your
these
head,
three are gut, these yeah, three are okay. Head. Excuse me, reaching up in front of us and see coming down.
Could it put on each any of the three, could they have been like within that tribe group? Could they have been in a different order?
No. Not really, because each one of these represents the mixture of those energies. The heart, the number one, for example, defines themselves as being hardworking and being critical. And what happens is they tend to immediately to see what's happening inside a picture. They see something that should be changed, and they feel very strongly that it should be changed, so they change it. There's not a lot of thought. They don't think it should be changed. Well, I really think it ought to be this way. It's that should be changed, which should is a very emotional word. If I should do it, there's this feeling of intensity that develops. And then it's this sense of, I am prideful that this should be changed. That's my identity, is changing chaos into order.
So it's like the color wheel. There, you have to put the colors.
Very much so, yeah. And in fact, if I were going to put a spectrum to this, I would make these primary colors. These represent, the centers would be primary. The intensity of the color, how much the essence is allowed to come through. So if you put, that's why I had the color transparencies out. Well, you didn't see that the first day about the centers. I see this as a red center, this is a yellow center, and this is a blue center. So you've got three primary colors, and then you move around to the spectrum, and it's more like a color band. Where does two leave off and one begin? It's hard to say. What does happen, though, is that you are on a continuum or another spectrum between the numbers. So if you find yourself, for example, doing things as the two, as I've described the assistant, service is your operative word. I want to serve others. That's your lifestyle. That tends to be how you want to live, is I want to serve and be of service to others, be helpful. As long as that helpfulness is reinforced, then your self-identity needs are met and you can feel pretty helpful. What's hard for the assistant to do, and I'll start with the heart center and move around, what's hard for the assistant to do is to give altruistically without strings attached. Because it's in the giving that string is created. And what the assistant does is give that piece of themselves away, and that's the string. So there's this unspoken expectation that there'll be a thank you note, or flowers, or I'll be invited to dinner next time because I invited you this time. There's this unspoken need that they need to be appreciated, and that's what those thank yous do. It's that pat on the back. Okay, altruistic giving means, I want you to have this, no strings attached. Enjoy it, do with it what you will. If it's ugly and you don't like it and you smash it, if I feel bad because you've smashed it, then there's a string attached. Altruistic giving means I'm giving it away.
So is what you're saying, say you're a two, mm-hmm. You're acting this way and you want the flattery and the praise and you don't get it and you tend to.
What happens is that you tend to slide down the arrow. Now this is the negative side.
Slide down the arrow.
The two will slide down into eight and they take on the vindictiveness or the vengeance quality of the eight. The two can get so angry that they tend to almost take on this almost negative power. Where it's not so much that they want control, but they want you to know how angry they are because you didn't appreciate them. Can I tell a story?
Yes.
I really love you, too.
Go ahead.
Joanne was taking care of some friend's cat a few years ago. And they'd gone out of town, and this cat was just wonderful. She'd found him on the side of the road, and it was this kind of cat thing. And I have a cat, too, but it's a different story. And these people went out of town, and she drove 5 or 6 miles across town every day to go feed the cat, let him out for a little while, really taking care of these people's cat, and they're good friends. Well, they came home. Joanne and I are talking one night, and I asked her how things were, and she's kind of fuming inside. She says, that stupid cat. I thought, well, what happened? Why do you suddenly hate this cat? Well, I took care of their stupid cat, and they never even thanked me for it. There's this sudden burst of anger. I'm like, where's this coming from? And what happened was she hadn't been appreciated for taking care of the animal. But rather than take it out on the people and risk the relationship, the cat is stupid. Okay, so it's a more internal thing, okay? There's an acting out. There's a behavior that goes with it that can be watched, but it's more internal.
Okay. So now they know who I am.
No, they don't.
Okay.
They only know what you do the best.
All right, what I do the best.
Well, you haven't quite said that, I think.
Go ahead, Tom. Sure.
If you look at each one of those two, look at the harmony on top and the slope is below. Now think of that as a vertical pole. And the good stuff that's on top, that's the harmony. And that's what you strive for.
Right.
But the slope is what you can slip into. So the upper part of the pole is the healthy part. And the bottom part is the decaying part. Right. And you can do that with each one of those words. The good stuff is on top, but you can slip down into whatever it says.
Makes sense? Okay. Yeah. The bold-faced word, all capital, this is in our best space, high self-esteem, this is how we want to feel. The two says, I am of service. You know, Mother Teresa is a real good example. I'm giving to the poor in India. They can never pay me back, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. So what she's done is she's gone against, okay, the method of growth isn't for the two to become service. It's for the two to develop sensitivity. They take on the sensitivity that the fours do very well. They're not just saying, I'm going to be helpful. It's like, where can I do the most good? Being sensitive to themselves, being more artistic, creating something that means something to the world. They're sort of, instead of just, I'm going to spend my whole life taking care of other people, it's like, I'm going to take care, I'm going to do this service work, but I'm going to be sensitive to where it will do the most good. Instead of just shotgun service, where I want everybody, I want to take care of everybody, because if I don't, my self-identity is at stake. Being selective with service, and focusing all of that helpful energy in one place will do more good than just helping everyone.
Like taking care of your own family first, and then taking care of maybe a few other areas instead of trying to do it all.
Very good. Yeah?
Another two quick questions. One, have you addressed which areas seem to do better in different occupations?
We can talk about that.
Okay, and the other one was, have you addressed yet when looking at spouses or long-term relationships, are there certain groups that would not do well together or that would do well together? I mean, do they do these things like marriage counseling and stuff like that?
Again, it can be applied to many different situations. And because we're all, and let me explain one more thing. Because of the two being where it is, where healthy movement tends to, when they're healthy, they tend to move this way and be more sensitive to their own needs. And negative, they tend to take on this vindictiveness of, you're not helping me, you're not meeting my needs. Mm-hmm. The two is really in a continuum between 8 and 4. So 2 becomes very amorphous. Are you here on the line? Are you dropping somewhat toward the 8? Are you doing manipulation to get your needs met? Are you moving this way saying, I'll put my family first today, but tomorrow I've really got to go to that meeting and take care of those other things? There's a continuum, and you bounce back and forth, and it happens very quickly. The compulsive behavior that we've developed happens instantly. It happens in a phrase, in a look, in you know, how many of you have been driving in traffic and been cut off, and the first thing you do is, son of a gun, cut me off. And there's this honking of the horn. And sometimes, and some people get that livid, I do sometimes.
That's a male thing.
Not
really.
No,
well,
it's like it's an excitement there.
Hey, Fred. No. Yes, Tom.
You're so close to this thing. I keep calling it back a little bit for people who hadn't looked at this thing before.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll ask the question for you. Wouldn't it be helpful to think of those arrows, let's think of them as spears. The sharp edge, the hurtful edge, is the one with the point on it. That's it. So if you want, that's the negative. If you didn't think of it that way, you might get the impression that's the way you're supposed to go. That's the way, when you slip, that's the direction you go.
Shoots and ladders.
Hurt somebody.
Ever play shoots and ladders?
Mm-hmm.
Line on the slide, drop down. Now, see, what's positive for the two is dangerous for the one. See, because the one slips into the four, but they slip into the negative side of the four, which is the gloominess, and the ones do it internally. They're used to coming out here and fixing what's out here, but then if for some reason they can't make it perfect, they can't fix that radio, or they can't fix that person, they turn it inside. It becomes an internal gloominess, and they take on this I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm awful, I'm imperfect. And instead of counting blessings, they count imperfections, they count sins, they count all of this stuff that just destroys them. Yeah.
But can the two also get down to the sensitivity and then become gloomy? So
no, not really. He says what happens is in a really good space, the two will be more sensitive. In bad space, they drop to the eight. They don't take on the four's negative qualities. That's one of the difficult things about the arrows that I have trouble understanding. Well, do you become a four? The answer is no. This is your hometown. You know, on a good day, I'm going to go to Disneyland. On a bad day, I'm going to go to the, you know, to the IRS office.
Okay, but then the two could be doing the four, and you would get into the
room. You'll see the two doing the four, but now, remember with the two, it's I am helpful. So if they're not appreciated, what they will try to do is get that appreciation. They don't do it by looking dour and sad. They'll do it more directly. They'll be something that could get broken. You know, it's almost a demand. It becomes this, it's like they do it on purpose. They'll get angry. Fours don't get that angry. They feel anger, but it's turned into a gloominess. It's turned inside. They introvert it. It moves in. Yeah.
I don't understand on this one. Say you're an 8 and you slip down to 5. Your negative side, if you're a strong person, the 9, the negative with you, you become a miser.
What is it? Okay, we've talked
miserliness?
About, yeah. By miserliness, I mean that the 8 has all this power. We can talk about these, not in any specific order, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I just didn't understand what the definition of miserliness.
The 8 defines themselves as being powerful. It's power directed outwardly. They have the power and they want to use it. The best way to use it is they can use it to intimidate other people, standing over them, doing this number. Or by being stronger, faster, quicker, dangerous, hanging off the sides of mountains. The presence of an 8 is the presence that says, here I am, deal with me. Interrupt a conversation. And the 8 doesn't consider it an interruption, it's just they have something they want to take care of, and they've got to move on. So they'll interrupt the conversation, and it's not intended to be rude. But that can be how it's interpreted. And I gave the example yesterday of the 8 pushing up against somebody. Sometimes if there's several people that have power in a room, usually it's the 8 that will find out where that power is, push up against it in order to establish the pecking order. How much power do I really have here? I want to be in charge, but am I in charge? Yes or no? What happens then is if the 8 becomes overpowered, their way of regaining the power, or even of facing it, is to withdraw entirely. They go down here and say, fine, I won't give you any power.
Mm. Or anything.
I won't give you anything.
Oh, so that's what should be by miserliness.
Miserliness is stinginess, this parsimony.
Yeah,
this Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah.
Ebenezer Scrooge is a good example of an 8.
Abandonment? Like abandonment almost, emotionally?
Yes, of course.
I see that in some people.
Sure, and why do they do it?
Because they lost their power.
No, because they want to have it, and they still have it. They maintain the power by not giving it away.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yesterday you said
people depend on you. People depend on you, and you hold back. Then you are like, it's if you are one of the pillars, and you pull your pillar away, then that's the people need you, and they're going to try to bring you back to get your power.
And what's
back.
Worse is sometimes gain satisfaction and watching the whole thing
totally
collapse.
Yeah.
And you go. Great. Yeah. And then you kick the pieces around. Say,
well, you said you were an eight. And a moment ago, you said something about male riders. You were testing your strength. Deal with me, sister.
I've never been with a woman that cut someone that got mad when someone cut him off.
Well, you've never driven with me.
Yeah. I've never been with another eight.
She's
I'm
like,
not an eight.
I'm driving along. She says, oh, let him in. She's driving, gets cut off. What's up?
That's true. I admit it. In front of all of
and
these
in front
people.
Of all these witnesses. That's great.
But it's a good thing we're leaving today.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it on the way home.
That's right.
Yeah, there are some of us that after we've experienced that driving around with an eight, choose not to ride with them again.
That's right.
This is true. Go by myself.
And the eight will say, I don't care, I'll do it myself. And inside they're crying. Like a good vision of the eight is that they're like a marshmallow at a campfire. They're all crusty and hard on the outside, and inside is this really soft, gooey stuff. Sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
So the people around them would want to bring out the good, the more positives to help them keep the strength. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying? I mean, if you want a healthy relationship.
Let me do what the eight does when they're really healthy. Okay. They move into the service of the two. The word empowerment really applies to what eights are able to do. The eight says, I trust you. One, it's hard for eights to trust, but I trust you to take this project, this child, this whatever, and I'm going to give you full responsibility, and I'm going to give you the authority to handle this. So what I've done is I've taken this big electrical current that this eight is like a dynamo, and I've gone, whoosh, and I've turned you up. Okay.
You give it a power to others?
Yeah, but not, and it's like, if you fail, that's okay. I have given you this opportunity. I've given this to you. It's hard for the eight to walk away and say, let me know how it goes. It's better for the eight to say, let me know if you need anything else. Because then you're totally on your own. They have empowered you to do it, and they've challenged you. Okay, they're not overseeing you to say, "Well, you're not done yet." I obviously can't trust you.
Yeah, no, they don't do that. They give it, and they give it away totally. They do much.
That's the goal. It's hard to do that.
But that's healthy, you're saying?
It's healthy for them to give it away.
Oh, okay, good.
To empower. What happens is when they take it and they think, "I'm not going to give you any power. I'm going to keep it all for myself. I'm going to keep it all." Hi.
Where's my mom?
She's there.
I don't think she's here. Dad's not this one. Let me check next door. Okay. One more door over.
That's right. You come back. I like your glasses.
Well, that's interesting.
Okay. So the idea is that it can happen very quickly. An eight gets into a position where they're challenged. And if they feel like they can win, if they feel like they've got more power, then they feel more strong, more strength. But what happens when they become too strong? It's like the muscle builders become muscle bound. Mm-hmm. It becomes very difficult to pick up a child. So there's this tension that builds up, and they need to release it. They need to do something that gives them... Actually, and what happens if I empower you, if I'm an eight, and I empower you, and I'm doing eight so well, and I empower you, and I empower you, and I empower you, and you do what's been suggested and what's been given to you, then I suddenly have more power. Because I'm able to give you more. And instead of the eight becoming a reservoir or a capacitor electrically for power, it becomes a conduit. And because I'm responsible in giving this power out, more power seems to come into me. People start coming to me for advice. What do you think I should do? I need your help. Can you let me do this? And the eight suddenly takes on this service business, which is an ideal. I'd love to be able to do that, but as an eight, it's really hard to do that because I want to maintain the control. So I think that's one of the issues.
Do men and women tend to be certain ones?
No.
No.
This is non-gender specific.
Non-gender. Okay.
Culturally, we expect men to be more like this and women to be more like this.
Okay.
Culturally.
Okay.
But because that's an overlay too, we have to get through some. A lot of women think, oh, I must be a two because I'm always taking care of people. They may find out they're really no sage, mm-hmm. and they'd rather spend more time at the bookstore learning or teaching, accumulating knowledge. But no, they've given their life to someone else. Okay, what's the next number? We'll do this in your order.
Seven.
Sevens. I can talk at great length about sadness.
But I won't.
Next. The optimist, of course, sees the world like Maria von Trapp in The Sound of Music. It's a beautiful place. It's fun to play. Every day is Disneyland. Let's go out and have a good time. Very difficult for them to focus on one thing. The key word for the seven is options. I'm going to keep my options open. They don't like to use the C word very much. C word?
Commitment. I won't tell any story.
You're not allowed. You'll have to come back next year. Okay.
Pardon? Are you married yet, Fred?
No.
No. But we've been seeing each other for about 5 years. So can we go on to a different time? Not here, really. Now, you'll notice that the negative sign for the seven, where do they go? Well, not the escapism. That's, remember, this is an internal. The negative stuff is internal. The behaviors come out, but the motivation is, I'm running away.
Judgment.
Indignation. Yeah. Yeah. If I give somebody an idea, and I think it's a great idea, hey, have you thought about doing it this way? And they go, that's a stupid idea. Usually somebody like this. Usually a one says, that'll never work. Then I get indignant, and I go, what do you mean it won't work? You know, it's like this, it just pulls Bram right away. Tom, I don't know if you've ever experienced this.
I love it.
We are living proof that sevens can do this and still be alive. It's very, tenuous to do it to an eight. They tell you, that's a stupid idea, and you go, it is not a stupid idea, and then suddenly there's this unfurling of wings. And you kind of feel like, gotta go.
Okay. For 36 years, we've been happily irreconcilable. I get ideas the way dogs get fleas. The response is, if you get one more idea, you are to repress it.
Okay, that takes us to the second point, which is when the seven is in real good space. Okay, now remember in the movie, Maria. She's just brought the children back up from their little day of adventures climbing the trees, running through the streets of Salzburg, dressed in drapes, mind you. And we're dealing with a captain. Captain von Trapp is a pretty stereotypical one. This guy goes to bed with his tie on. Right? He's always marching around. He's a captain in the German Navy. He stands erect. You think if this guy got any stiffer, he'd be dead. He walks like this, he does this number, and the thing with the one is you'll see this tendency to stand straight and this rigidity, because that's how you should stand. Better blood flow, oxygenation, better way to get, focus that anger. Okay, and what'll happen in the movie, she brings the kids back on the boat, and they go, hi, Dad, hi, and he's going, opens the gate, get in here, what do you think you're doing? And the boat tips over. All the children go into the drink. And they're all laughing and screaming. It's the first time in the movie they've been laughing. They come out. Dad's very upset, and he makes them stand like this. He blows the little whistle on them. Then the children run into the house to get dry. And Maria comes out of the pond, and she's really glad to see him because she really loves him, but she doesn't know it yet. And they get into an argument. Okay. And he starts yelling at her about, what do you think you're doing? These children should be dead. They march. They don't play. And she gets really indignant, right in his face. Well, Captain, I just think you're terrible, this and this and this, the other thing. And finally, he ends up calling her Captain. Watch the movie. It's a real funny little scene. And he starts sputtering. Because when the seven is indignant, they really do it really well. But the thing is, it's not dangerous. It's not like the vengeance that the two experiences, which can be really, if you ever saw Jagged Edge, there's a real example of Glenn Close as the two running into the eight. Oh my God, you ever see it? The seven does the indignance, and what they're trying to do is protect themselves. They don't want to feel the pain that they might have had a bad idea. That's painful. I don't want to feel that. So I'll make it, I'll get indignant and blow it back in your face. I'll push it out. Mm-hmm. I'll deflect it. That's the word I'm looking for. In really good space, though. The seven moves into the wisdom of the five. They take all of this mental energy, which is pretty tiring sometimes. You've told me that. How can you go to sleep at night? It's like sometimes I can't. And they focus. They do commit. And they'll commit to a topic or a person or a situation. And they'll focus all of this wonderful idea business and synthesize something brand new. And they're brilliant. They can be very brilliant people. If you saw the movie Dead Poets Society, Robin Williams, I think, does seven almost better than anybody in the world. The quickness of his mind and the way he can jump in and out of characters is just, it's tiring even for me. But I love to watch it. In the movie Dead Poets Society, he plays this professor. And he has this way of teaching all the children in this school. It's a boys' school. He teaches them about poetry. And he has this intensity about what he really loves. He's made his choice. He's focused down on teaching poetry. And he teaches it in his own way, in his own style. And that he has developed this wisdom, this ability to focus down and teach what he wants to teach. And it's magical. It's like all the power of Disneyland coming out in one ride.
Yeah.
It's really delightful. And the seven gains more wisdom because then they start having new ideas about the one topic and they start pulling in different ideas. Mm-hmm. I like to think I've done some of that with the Enneagram because of the things that I've been able to accumulate and talking to the different teachers and pulling these together. And I hope I'm offering you something new today that you're going to read in the book.
Okay, a question.
Yes.
So the number seven, the seven.
Right.
Do they ever resort to escapism?
Oh, that's the end of their life is escapism. Want to go to the movies?
Okay, so that's when they get really down. That's
well,
where
no,
they are.
For the seven, we'll now see what happens.
I mean, when do they experience this negative side? I guess.
See, the thing is, the negative side comes whenever their ideas get. They get confronted about who they are. I'm not, what do you mean I'm not happy? I'm really happy. I love to be happy. Why shouldn't I be happy? There's this sense of, okay. I'm gonna push you away. Don't tell me I'm not happy.
So when they're not effective,
yeah.
Then they hit the bottom. And if, when you backtrack, when they're going to their negative, like when seven's going to one, mm-hmm. they would almost always end up at the...
Indignation is one of the behaviors you're going to see. They feel indignant, and it's inside. And they can use it against themselves. Whoosh, that was a stupid idea. You know, they can slide right into it. Well, why do they think that's such a stupid idea? And usually they'll voice it. As a seven driving down the freeway, somebody cuts me off, and I'm listening to a great song on the radio, and suddenly I've got to get my attention back on the road because this truck has cut me off. Up goes the hand. And I've been told, don't do that in California, you can get shot.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
And it's like, I need to be more responsible about those reactions. Mm-hmm. Primarily head center, secondary gut. So the head says, hey, I've been cut off, and the gut responds. Stop responding. Tell
what about excess? That's another negative thing that we sevens can slip into.
The sevens slip into an excess because if some is good, more is better.
Right.
That's a real easy thing to do. Sevens do it because if I have to limit myself, then, well, I don't want to. I don't want to experience limits. I want my options. I want to do whatever I want. Peter Pan syndrome. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. Right. Let me quit moving. It's 11:30. Do you want to stay for a few more minutes and we'll move around this? I will make sure you go to lunch. Okay. Pick a number, any number. We've done
well,
seven
that's
and one.
That's no great loss anymore.
We've done seven and two.
Six.
One.
One.
Yes.
One?
Yes.
You sure?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. The ones define themselves as being hardworking. I'm a hardworking person. I feel good about myself. I want to feel good about what you're doing, but you should do it the way I want you to. The ones are very discerning. They're able to look at problems and fix them. And they don't always know how. It's just this kind of an innate ability to go in and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When the one is in negative space, where do they go?
Get sad.
They go down with zero. They fall down the path of least resistance. It's the easiest way to go. It's like, would you rather go up to Holden Lake or back down to the village? Climbing up that switchback, it's like, I want to go back to the village. I want to go down here. Okay. they drop into the gloominess of the four, which is where they take that discernment and they start using it on themselves. They're like surgeons going, well, I'm going to cut this here and I cut this there. And they're dangerous to themselves. And the anger that they've been repressing, their biggest problem is their anger, and they deny the anger, and it's sitting inside. And whenever they go down here, that increases the gloominess, it intensifies it. I'm a really terrible person. The judgment call. I've got to be awful. Nobody could like me because of this. And suddenly it's this poor me. Oh. Where sometimes the force live that way, and they like it. Being sad is okay. Oh, God. That was the most beautiful movie ever. You want to tell the four, it's not real. Somebody else wrote it, and they're making money. This person doesn't really live this way.
Oh, it's such a sad story.
And you're talking about a four.
Yeah, the four's like that. The one would say, that's a stupid movie. I think they should have done this better. Maybe if they changed this scene a little bit, it would have been a better show. Anyway. The hard thing for the one to do is what?
Be optimistic.
Yeah. Be playful. How many people who are doing one really well say, well, I'm playful. I schedule 20 minutes of playtime. That's right. Yeah, it's time to go to Holden. It's time to play.
Do ones look for sevens and spouses?
Do they look for something
that you're missing? So you know.
Ones? Well. Really? Jan, would you answer that, please?
I got a seven for a spouse. And I'm a one.
Yes, babe.
Yeah.
Would a one pick out the mistakes in the movie?
Oh, yes.
Instead of watching the movie and enjoying it, just pick out something. They didn't have continuity. Or
they don't like movies that much or to go to movies.
Well, wait a minute. Now, ones will go to movies. As long as it's the right movie.
You gotta be
the basically right. No. Well, I saw that. I didn't like it the first time. I'm not gonna like it the second time.
And if there's a useful message.
Oh, yeah. You asked about sevens and ones. Ones tolerate sevens.